Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's a big week for the president, a decision on troops in Afghanistan, a health care bill on the Senate floor, and the front and center issue for millions of Americans, jobs. Unemployment is brutal and long right now, the worst in decades. It's pummeling out-of-work Americans, scaring the rest, and it could drag the whole economy back down. So, where are the jobs? Where could they be? And what will it take to produce them? This hour, On Point, America's jobs challenge and what it may take to meet it. You can join the conversation. Is that you, unemployed and pounding the pavement? What do you see out there? And should Washington pour on more stimulus or just wait now for the kindling to light? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from New York is Betsy Stark, business correspondent for ABC News. Betsy, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. So good to be with you.
Big jobs summit on for this Thursday at the White House. Who's coming, Betsy?
An interesting cross-section from big business, small business, academia, nonprofits, organized labor, the mayors of Des Moines, San Antonio, Allentown, Pennsylvania, about 130 attendees. And the RSVPs are still trickling in.
I'm looking here, Eric Schmidt from Google, the top folks from AT&T and FedEx,
Quest,
and
FedEx,
Disney.
Disney, the parent of ABC, Boeing, a couple of Nobel Prize-winning economists.
Joe Stiglitz.
So quite an interesting and diverse group.
And then right on down into a lot of union representation as well. There's a sort of a mixed reading on how much is really on the agenda, at least how much the White House wants to have on the agenda, Betsy. How do you read what the White House is going to push or propose at this meeting?
Well, I think to start, just as a it's a political event as well as an economic event. The administration needs to show that it's doing something about jobs and answering critics who've been saying, why all this focus on health care, the war in Afghanistan, when we've got a jobs emergency? But beyond that, when I ask the White House what we can expect to see, they say, take a look at the six breakout sessions that are planned for the afternoon on Thursday, and you'll get an indication of where jobs policy may be heading. There's going to be a breakout session on green jobs, not surprising to hear that from the Obama administration, jobs that focus on clean energy and renewable technologies. Small business job growth. One of the big problems has been the lack of, or the inability of small businesses right now to get access to capital. Hard for them to get bank loans. There's a continuing credit crunch for small businesses. So what can be done to help them along those lines? Creating jobs through rebuilding the infrastructure, another Obama administration high-value goal, repairing highways, refurbishing schools, and maybe using some of the stimulus money to get that done. There's going to be a breakout session on creating job opportunities for American workers through exports. The cheap dollar and strong emerging economies have made this perhaps an opportunity. There's one about encouraging business competitiveness, which when I asked about that at the White House, I interpret that one as how to use tax credits to encouraging hiring. And then there's going to be a session on preparing workers through retraining programs. We've got a number of dying industries in this country, Tom, and getting some of those workers into next-generation jobs will also be on the agenda.
What kind of resources, Betsy, is the administration prepared to propose putting behind these efforts? President Obama's been talking a lot lately about the deficit and the need to push back on that. Some outside have said we need more stimulus. Where do you see the Oval Office coming down?
That's such a tricky question for the administration right now. You don't hear anybody that I talk to inside the White House wanting to use the words second stimulus. I think that the notion is to try to do things that will have the impact of stimulus, but not to call it that. You know, there's bailout fatigue, there's concern about the deficit. The dream is to try to come up with some more targeted programs like cash for clunkers, which are not all that expensive, but which give you a lot of bang for the buck. So, for example, there's something circulating called Cash for Caulkers, which would create jobs by using federal money to do a mass weatherizing of homes to make them more energy efficient. So it's hard to get answers right now on how you'd pay for this. And there's legitimate disagreement, too, about how worried we should be about driving up the deficit in order to create jobs. I think it's important for the administration to talk the talk about fiscal restraint. But what I've heard is that that's really sort of a more of a medium-term goal, and that the understanding is that near-term there may need to be some more spending in order to deal with this jobs emergency.
Up on a high wire with millions of Americans, 15.7 million or so, out of work. Betsy Stark, business correspondent for ABC News. Thank you so much for being with us, Betsy.
Thank you, Tom.
Betsy Stark in New York. Here was President Obama on Thanksgiving Day talking about steps he's taking to address the nation's jobs crisis.
Next week, I'll be meeting with owners of large and small businesses, labor leaders, and non-for-profit leaders from across the country to talk about the additional steps we can take to help spur job creation. I'll work with Congress to enact those proposals quickly. And it's my fervent hope and my heartfelt expectation that next Thanksgiving, we will be able to celebrate the fact that many of those who've lost their jobs are back at work, and that as a nation, we will have come through these difficult storms stronger, wiser, and grateful to have reached a brighter day.
President Obama on Thanksgiving Day talking about jobs by next Thanksgiving. If you're out of work, that can sound like a long time, maybe for the economy as well. We're looking at the country's jobs challenge, jobs crisis in this hour. Joining me right now from Westchester, Pennsylvania, Mark Zandi is here, chief economist, co-founder of Moody's Economy.com, economic research group, a lot of pull in Washington. He was an advisor to John McCain's 08 presidential campaign. He's now consulted and quoted by both Democrats and Republicans in Congress. Mark Zandi, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Thomas. Good to be with you.
And with us today, Robert Kuttner, co-founder and co-editor of the American Prospect magazine. His most recent book is Obama's Challenge, America's Economic Crisis and the Power of a Transformative Presidency. Bob Kuttner, welcome back as well.
Thanks, Tom. Always a pleasure.
Mark Zandi, first to you. What do you see coming on Thursday? Is it really going to be down and dirty at grips with the scale of the unemployment problem we're facing in this country?
Well, I think as Betsy pointed out, it's both a political event and an economic one. It will show that the administration is concerned, obviously, as it should be, with regard to what's going on in the job market. But hopefully some good policy efforts will come out of this process and some things that will really make a difference.
Bob Kuttner, President Obama himself, has been speaking cautiously. Deficit has clearly been high on his mind, on his agenda. Can you carry the deficit high in mind and address the jobs problem, realistically?
Yes, you can. It's a sequencing challenge. I personally think that, and I will be at the summit myself, I think in the short run, which I would define certainly as all of 2010 and maybe some of 2011, you need a substantially bigger stimulus, which means a substantially bigger deficit. And obviously, you also need a long-term plan, once recovery comes, to reduce the ratio of the national debt to the gross domestic product, which is exactly what happened after World War II. We had this enormous burst, 4 years of enormous deficit spending. That's what it finally took to blast the economy out of the Depression. And then after 1945, we had a very restrained fiscal policy, and the debt ratio came down. So as the president famously said to John McCain, when McCain proposed suspending the campaign and not debating so that he can focus on the bailout, the president needs to be able to do more than one thing at the same time. And you can appropriately be concerned about the deficit and pay it down over time, but understand that in a severe recession and a jobs crisis like this, you need more deficit spending in the short run. So that's what I hope he does.
Mark Zandi, you were at John McCain's elbow during the 08 campaign, but earlier this year, you were a strong supporter of economic stimulus to veer away from the big hole we were all facing. What about now? Do we need more billions, tens, hundreds of billions in stimulus? Is there a political appetite for that?
Yes, I think we need more stimulus, more help for the economy, temporary tax cuts to try to stimulate job creation and more spending targeted to the unemployed workers who will lose their jobs and can't get back into a job market, and also help for state and local governments that are under significant financial pressure. If they don't get help, they'll be cutting employment. So I do think in the near term it's important for more tax cuts, more spending, a temporarily higher deficit. And Bob's right. I think it is a sequencing problem. In the near term, we need to run larger deficits, but that's to get the economy up and running so that we can make progress in reducing those deficits longer run.
I know you've expressed concern about the deficits themselves. Why more spending now then? You're also talking about the risk of falling back into the Great Recession.
Well, that's it. We have to avoid falling back into recession, because if we do, it's going to be very difficult to get out. The unemployment rate's already into the double digits, and it will rise measurably higher. And, of course, policymakers are running out of ammunition. The Federal Reserve has got the interest rate at zero, and we do have these large budget deficits. So it's important not to get back into a recession, because the cost to taxpayers will be even greater than providing some near-term help for the economy.
And unemployment a big factor in that, because if the motor isn't working with consumers with a paycheck to spend, you can't get the economy up and purring.
Yeah, that's the issue. We're at 10.2% unemployment. Clearly, it's going to rise higher with so many people. And by the way, that doesn't even do justice to the stress in the labor market. I mean, there's so many other millions of people who are working, have a job, but are underemployed. They don't have the hours that they want. Other people are getting their pay cut. And with this kind of surfeit of people out there without work or underemployed, it puts pressure on their wages, and wages are getting cut and may decline, and that's a big problem.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about America's jobs crisis and what to do about it, talking in advance of President Obama's big White House jobs summit this Thursday. Here's President Obama again from Thanksgiving Day talking about Americans and jobs.
Though the job losses we were experiencing earlier this year have slowed dramatically, we're still not creating enough new jobs each month to make up for the ones we're losing. And no matter what the economists say, for families and communities across this country, this recession will not end until we completely turn that tide. So we've made progress, but we can't rest. And my administration will not rest until we've revived this economy and rebuilt it stronger than before, until we're creating jobs and opportunity for middle-class families, until we've moved beyond the cycles of boom and bust, of reckless risk and speculation that led us to so much crisis and pain these past few years.
President Obama on Thanksgiving Day, on this week's Thursday, he'll be at the White House with a whole lot of business and labor leaders talking about jobs. Mark Zandi is with us this hour, chief economist at MoodysEconomy.com. Robert Kuttner is here from the American Prospect magazine. Robert Kuttner, what's on your short list, sir? What would you propose be done to get some jobs created here?
Well, I think the order of magnitude is about $500 billion this year. Aid to the states is just crucial. I mean, you have over a three-year period a shortfall in the state and local budget of almost $500 billion. That's two-thirds of the federal stimulus. So what you're giving with one hand, you're taking away with the other, because when state budgets are cut, people are laid off, programs are suspended, maintenance projects are deferred. That's easy. You don't have to gear up new programs to wait for them to be shovel ready. You're just preventing existing programs from being shut down.
Okay.
I think there should be a piece of this that is direct federal public job spending. I like the cash for Calker's idea. Now, some people will say, well, that'll take a new bureaucracy, but it's not all that complicated to get something like that up and running. It can be done through nonprofit groups who have experience doing it. The Germans have a very interesting strategy I think we should follow. They subsidize short working time. If a factory or another employer is going to lay off workers, there is an alternative where you can put workers on part-time, and the national unemployment compensation system pays for a part of the cost of their lost wages, so the worker ends up with about 85% of his or her take-home pay. And that can take a lot of the sting out of unemployment. It also means that instead of somebody's workforce scattering to the four winds, they stay on the job with reduced working time.
But it's a little late for that now. I mean, most of these jobs are lost already that we're talking
about.
Yeah,
but more of them are being lost every month. We just need to use a lot of different strategies to keep the unemployment rate from rising even higher and to put people back to work. But my big ones would be state and local fiscal relief and direct federal emergency employment. I've been asked to be on the breakout session on infrastructure.
Right.
And you just look around our fair city of all the crumbling bridges and roads. And
you're speaking from Boston today.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is no shortage of important things to do. There's no shortage of people being laid off who need to stay on the job. And this is money well spent.
Mark Zandi, let's go straight to that one. A lot of people still have WPA images from the Great Depression. I'm thinking that people may have thought we were past the time for that, you know, with the Great Recession having been declared sort of over. Is that still out there as a need? Should cash for caulkers and, I don't know, guys with shovels or greening up the cities, can you see that happening? Is there a political support for that?
I could see it happening, yes. I don't know that would make a big difference in 2010, which is where the focus, I think, right now should be.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take a while to really get that up and running and making a big difference in the job market. But I think it's clear that even when the economy gets going, say in 2011-12, that unemployment will be high for a long time. I mean, we're well over 10%. We're headed higher. We're not going back to full employment, which most economists, including myself, put at around 5-5.5% for years, 2012, 2013, 2014.
So
we're going to have lots of people unemployed and underemployed for many, many years. And in that context, I think things like an analog to the WPA would make some sense.
And what about Bob Cutner's $500 billion, half trillion that is, spending in 2010 on jobs programs? Is that out there? Would you go for that scale of intervention?
I think that's large. It sounds large to me. I don't know that we could even find programs to spend that amount of money in 2010. Bob may not be arguing for all that money in 2010. I think, though, if you provide a level of support to state and local government, if you provide more help to people who are losing their jobs and unemployment, if you have a jobs tax credit for businesses that create jobs, if you come up with a couple programs to help extend credit to small businesses, add that all up, that's about $250 billion spread out over 2010-11. I think that would make a meaningful difference and would significantly reduce the odds of falling back into recession, which I think that is the key objective here, and that's what policymakers should be focused on.
And with all the talk about deficit caution from the Obama administration in recent weeks, do you think they have the appetite even for, let's say, $250 billion? That's no small sum.
Well, that's a problem for them. I think more in a political sense than an economic one. I think most economists would agree that if you run larger short-term budget deficits, that's not a problem, particularly in the context of what we're going through right now, because the key threat posed by higher deficits is higher interest rates. You know, the government has to go out and borrow money, and if they're bumping against the borrowing by the private sector, by businesses and consumers, then you get higher interest rates and it becomes self-defeating. So that's not an issue now because businesses and consumers aren't borrowing and the government can borrow. But this is in the very near term, in 2010, early 2011. Once we get out further, we need to rein in those deficits. Otherwise, we will see much higher interest rates, and it will become self-defeating.
Bob Cutner, there's a political risk with deficit spending. You've written at the Huffington Post, and Arianna Huffington's been writing about a potential political Hurricane Katrina for President Obama if the Democrats face midterm elections with this kind of very deep unemployment.
Yes, I recently spoke before the House Democratic Caucus, and there's a lot of simmering anger just below the surface that they are up for re-election in 2010. Obama's not up for re-election until 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel like they're being hung out to dry, and Pelosi has been told by the White House not to expect White House support for large-scale stimulus spending. So I think the concern among House Democrats in particular is that the president is only going to support gestures. He's only going to support token levels of spending because a lot of his people are concerned that worry about the deficit is the more important long-term problem, whereas they live and die in the short term, as do most Americans. So there's a tug of war among Democrats about the scale of the stimulus spending.
And of course, if Mark Zandi is right and we're talking high unemployment or no return to full employment until 2014, that's not short term. Let's get our callers in here. Oakland, Iowa. Carl, you're on the air, Carl.
Good day.
Hi.
The proposal that we had developed, a group of engineers had developed and sent off to the president, to the Iowa senators, and to the Nebraska and Iowa congressional delegations, was that we take about $75 billion total, cut that in half into two programs. One would be a massive land acquisition through mostly easements for new transmission lines from the high wind energy areas to the two coasts.
So energy and, grid, a big energy grid expenditure, yep.
Only for right-of-way acquisition.
Okay.
Mostly in the form of easement, not right-of-way.
Right.
And the other $75 billion being spent on the new 100-meter tall wind energy turbines, which produce better than twice the amount of energy from the current 80-meter high unit.
Mm-hmm.
And have the government make advance purchases for these wind energy units.
Would you require that they be built in the USA, Carl?
Oh, certainly. This is a jobs program. This is a jobs program that will issue to the taxpayers return of all of the capital they put into it, and will return to the taxpayers new taxes from new factory jobs, and not from government people, which is the great failure of the Obama stimulus. Government is a net tax consumer. It is not a net tax generator. Factory jobs are net tax generators.
Carl, we've got it, and it sounds like a good and solid plan. We'll be interested to see what happens. But Mark Zandi, how about, first of all, the green push as a jobs program, and also Carl's critique that too much of the stimulus program this year has gone to supporting government rather than businesses that may create jobs?
Well, you know, I think it's important to realize that the stimulus package that was passed back in February, the $787 billion package, only a small part of that was actual infrastructure spending. $100 to $125 billion was infrastructure spending. Mm-hmm. Most of it was various kinds of tax cuts, help to unemployed workers, state and local government aid, that kind of thing. So it was a broad-based stimulus package. I think infrastructure spending as a source of job creation, including green technologies, is a reasonable thing to think about, although I can't comment on the particular mm-hmm. aspects of what he's proposing. But again, in a longer-term context, over the next 3-5 years, I think, though, for next year, for 2010, if we really want to get this thing turned around and we want to avoid going back into recession, we need to think about policies that are going to make a difference over the next 12 to 18 months. And these kinds of proposals probably won't do that.
Bob Cutner, I want to ask you about a kind of central metaphor you're using in talking about bailing out of the jobs crisis, and that is the huge deficit spending of the United States during World War II. Very, very large, much larger deficit spending than we have now. And as you point out, after the war, of course, America eventually came roaring back, and unemployment was not an issue. The economy went for a long time. But that was in a period where we had kind of a clear field as the, you know, the one untouched industrial power without real competitors. Now we're looking at lots of competitors. Do you have the same confidence, or do we have to have it, that if we, you know, put that big chunk of future earnings into a deficit now, that the future earnings will be there, that we can build the industry in the face of Chinese and all the other competition in the world to eventually pay that off?
Well, two responses. It is tougher now. On the other hand, we had that industrial supremacy after 1945 because we built it between 1941 and 1945. We certainly didn't have it in 1939 because we had all kinds of idle production capacity as a result of having had 10 years of depression. So I think you have to rebuild it. That gives you a fighting chance against industrial competitors. Let me argue against myself, though. I think the other thing that makes it more difficult is, as I learned when I studied economics back in the day, in those years, the national debt was not such a problem because we owed it to ourselves. That was the cliche. Now, of course, we owe a lot of it to the Chinese. So the other thing we need to do long term is to figure out how to get more of a control over our own national debt. One proposal I have sounds a little bit utopian, but I think we ought to have recovery bonds comparable to war bonds, And I think we ought to have a surtax on the financial industry so that the surtax would be used to have the financial industry buy a certain percentage of 3% bonds. I mean, the average American is getting 1% or 2% on savings, so maybe Wall Street should take some of their riches and buy some of these recovery bonds and show that they're patriots. Because if we have a bigger deficit and a bigger debt, and we have more and more dependence on China and the Middle East and Japan and Korea, other countries having to buy that debt, the dollar becomes under more and more stress. That's not sustainable either. But the alternative of doing nothing because we are fearful of increasing the debt, I think, would be the worst of all worlds. Then we'd just be stuck in a chronic recession with high unemployment where it becomes a debtor's prison, and you have to grow your way out of this. You can't deflate your way out of it.
Mark Zandi, how about that? If we push the big spending button for jobs right now, from your view as an economist, can we do that in some confidence that it will build a new, you name it, industrial or economic base, you know, to repay that deficit down the road?
Yes. Well, my argument is that we need to be aggressive now to ensure that we don't go back into a recession. Because if we go back into a recession, we're not coming out easily, and it's going to cost us more as taxpayers. I mean, a smaller economy means less tax revenue. It means more spending to support all those people who will be unemployed. So it's very important not to get into that situation. So we need to run a larger deficit, meaning temporary tax cuts, temporarily higher spending, to make sure that we don't go back into recession. Now, at the same time, all of this becomes a lot easier to do if we can do something credible about our long-term fiscal problems and reduce long-term budget deficits. And we have some windows of opportunity. Healthcare reform is a good window of opportunity, and hopefully we get a reasonably good healthcare bill, and that makes a big difference. Tax legislation. There has to be a piece of tax legislation to address the tax increases that will occur at the beginning of 2011. Nobody wants that, and so perhaps when that legislation is debated and discussed, we can think about what kind of revenue to raise. And also, I think it might be worthwhile to think about the budget process itself and change it so that we can make some of these hard decisions that we're going to have to make with respect to long-term tax increases and long-term spending cuts.
But does that mean it's defeatist for people to look at deficits now and say, oh, we don't want those to be bigger? Or if we're saying we have to invest with those, is the push not to lacking in confidence in the U.S. economy? And is there a reason for that caution, Mark?
Well, I think people have to understand that running deficits in the near term, in the next year, perhaps 2 years, is not a bad thing. In fact, it's the appropriate thing to ensure that we don't go back into recession and that we don't, as a result, run very, very large budget deficits. But at the same time, we think about how do we address the long-term fiscal situation. What kinds of things can we do, which, you know, mean tax increases and spending cuts, to address those long-term issues? If we can do both those things at the same time, then I think we'll be in much better shape one, two, 3 years down the road.
It's Bob.
There's one other complicated moving part here. Mm-hmm. There's a huge drive to create a special deficit commission that would create a plan for long-term deficit reduction, much of it at the expense of Social Security and Medicare, and then require Congress to take an up or down vote. And Obama's being pushed very hard by the deficit hawks to add that to the mix as well.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about America's jobs crisis and what to do about it in advance of President Obama's Big Jobs Summit this Thursday. Mark Zandi is here from MoodysEconomy.com. Robert Kuttner from the American Prospect. Let's take a call from Robin in Paulett, Vermont. Hi, Robin. You're on the air.
Tom, I love you. Thank you very much. I have been a new product developer in my past life. I've started two or three companies. Small companies, but as we know, small businesses are the big job generators.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm hearing this list of people marching into the summit, and I'm thinking, you know, these are all, you know, these are not job generators. You know, up in here in Vermont where I'm from, we've got an amazing company, Green Mountain Coffee, that's generating a ton of jobs. But I don't see those people being the ones that are getting their, you know, pulling their sleeves up and talking about how to really get jobs. I'd like to see the SBA start reaching out to those of us who like to create companies and like to create jobs and have done it before and are good at it. What we're not good at is bureaucracy and going after this creditor, that creditor, this tax thing for you know, job development.
Yeah, Robin, let me ask you, and I should say, I'm looking down the list here, and there are small business owners included here from Air Tractor and DiversiPak, and I don't know what some of the binary group. But as a small business creator yourself, what would help? What do you think would help boost small business to start generating more jobs, Robin?
Well, what I'm feeling is a lack of focus on local. I feel like we take too much. Like I have friends that have an orchard. They don't make apple juice for the United States because that all those apples are sent to China. They mash it up and they send it back as juice. Looks to me like we're wasting a lot of money on transportation. We get rhubarb from Denmark. I mean, we have rhubarb here in Vermont and New York. I think also that if we could focus some of that energy on agriculture, where we start feeding people locally, we wouldn't also have that big food problem we were talking about earlier in the week.
Yeah. Robin, thank you very much. Mark Zandi, first to you on that small business. What could be done to crank up job creation there? And what about Robin's localism support?
Well, she puts her finger on a key problem, and that is a lack of credit for small business people. Mm-hmm. Small businesses rely on credit cards and loans largely from small banks. And, of course, the credit card industry is pulling back. The number of credit cards is falling rapidly. And small bank lending is under extreme pressure because many small banks are failing because of their own financial problems. Mm-hmm. So there is a lack of credit, and that is a big problem. And I think she's right in that the Small Business Administration, the SBA, could be empowered to make more loans. And, in fact, in the stimulus package that was passed, there were some things that were done to SBA lending to make it more effective, and it has actually helped. SBA lending has picked up, but there's even a few more things that could be done to SBA lending to make it more attractive, more effective, to get more loans out there to these very hard-pressed small business people.
And rhubarb from Denmark, is there anything that's going to turn that around, or that's just the global world?
You know, I don't that extends well beyond my area of expertise. I don't know about that. But, you know, one thing to point out, one source of growth in our economy is exports. Exports are picking up because of the better global economy and the softer dollar. And that is helping to stem job losses in manufacturing. And I think we'll start to create more jobs going forward. So we need to promote and entice more global trade, because that will be a net benefit to our job market.
Bob Cutner, do you see the net benefit there? I'm reading over the weekend about potential problems in China. They've got huge overcapacity. It's tough enough to compete with the China price in regular times. If they have overcapacity and cut prices to try and put that to work, can exports be a real job generator for this country?
Well, I think they can help. I think there's a structural bias against American exports in the sense that the Chinese manipulate their currency, so we are not as competitive as we might be. It's kind of hard to take a tough line against the Chinese when they're our biggest creditor. I think other countries have industrial policies. They have national strategies to become competitive in green energy, or the Germans have the world's highest industrial wages, but they have the world's highest trade surplus relative to GDP. We don't go in for that. I think we ought to. We need to be targeting the industries of the future and helping them. I think on the small business piece, this is an area where the whole bailout plan has really failed, because it has been too oriented toward the biggest banks on Wall Street at the expense of the community banks. And so while you have the rules being waived for securities that are underwater, which are clogging up the portfolios, of the big money center banks, the rules are not being waived for community banks, where examiners are going through their portfolios with a fine-tooth comb and telling them to come up with more capital and raise their lending standards just at a time when small businesses are starved for credit. I think SBA, Small Business Administration, can help with some direct lending, but if we don't get a handle on this, it's an emblem of the fact that we haven't gone about the bank bailout in the right way.
That's within the executive authority of a White House. I've got a comment here from Facebook, Bob, from Scott. It says, President Obama needs to replace his economic team with voices that don't represent Uber capitalism and Wall Street. What about it, Mr. Cutner? Do you see this president lining up behind the kind of progressive agenda you're laying out, or are he and his team just simply not there?
Well, I think the top people in his team are pretty close to Wall Street. I do think there's a diversity of voices inside the administration. I think the chair of the Council of Economic Advisors, Christina Romer, is a voice in favor of greater stimulus, as is Jared Bernstein, who's the vice president's economist. Today's New York Times, you have Mike Barr, the assistant treasury secretary, really coming down hard on the big banks for not coming across with mortgage relief, which, by the way, could be another source of stimulus. I mean, people are losing their homes because we don't have a credible program of foreclosure relief, and that's another area where we could be doing better.
Let's get a call from Virginia Harrisonburg. And Mike, hi, Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
The point I wanted to make is that everyone talks about the recovery the economy is eventually going to go through, and I don't think you could possibly talk about a recovery without implementing a fair trade policy instead of the free trade that we have. Fair trade with countries that have the same standard of living and workplace regulations and safety that we have. We could grow our economies back with countries that had that similar standard of living, and we could have fair trade instead of free trade. Free trade with countries with the same standard of living and workplace safety, fair trade with countries that have the only thing they really have to offer is the low-wage labor.
Mike, you know some people will hear that and say, well, Mike, you're proposing protectionism there, and that will just shut everything down. What do you say to that?
Well, it's protectionism, of course, but it's protectionism for the American worker from the low labor worker from the third world countries. With the fair trade, free trade mm-hmm. with countries with the same standard of living, we could grow not only our economy, but economies that had the same standard of living as we had, Australia, the mm-hmm. European countries.
Yeah, we got it. Mike, let us pick it up. Mark Zandi, is that an option? How do you see it?
Well, I think you pointed out the concern, the key concern, that would be protectionism. I think if protectionist sentiment were to rise here and overseas, that would be a significant threat to the global economy, to our economy. That would be one reason to go back into recession. In fact, I think going back to the Depression of the 30s, one of the key reasons we suffered a depression was that we did see protectionist sentiment boil over and restrict trade. So we've got to guard against that.
But our caller, Mike, says, it's protectionism, and he's for it. Not with all economies, you know, but mm-hmm. not with the comparable economies, mm-hmm. but with the low-wage economies. Mm-hmm. So the sentiment's right there. What would you say to Mike on that front, Mark?
Yeah, now, you're right. Now, having said that, there are some things that we should pursue, and Bob put his finger on one of those, and that is to cajole the Chinese to continue to revalue their currency. The U.S. dollar is significantly overvalued against the Chinese currency, 25% to 30% by most estimates. And it is appropriate, both from our perspective and the Chinese perspective and the global economic perspective, for them to continue to revalue their currency. They've stopped doing that during the crisis. They need to continue doing that. And I think they will, because it is in their best interest. But we have to guard against protectionism. That would be a very counterproductive and a very significant mistake.
Let's get a call from Hartford, Connecticut. Gary, you're on the air, Gary.
Yes, Tom, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to follow up regarding a class of people that I'm in, which is the over 45 class that were laid off. I worked for Johnson & Johnson, was laid off in June, mm-hmm. and I'm having a difficult time returning to the workforce. And I think there are a lot of people that I've met at support groups that have fallen into the same situation, and I wonder what will be done regarding this class of people, highly paid, highly skilled, and very dedicated to their employers. And we feel that a lot of us are really the disposable Americans that were described in Louis Hutchitel's book.
Yeah, Gary, let me ask you, did age come up in your when you were let go from your employer?
Well, it didn't come up directly, but what I was asked to do was to sign an enhanced severance, basically agreement, not to sue the company for age discrimination if I took the enhanced severance package, which, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, it's never going to come up directly, but you know, there's a lot of evidence that a lot of people in my age range are, have been laid off during this recession, and I think that it's almost an opportunistic situation where companies are seeing, hey, listen, you know, there's so many people in this age range that are being laid off. Is everyone going to sue for age discrimination? Probably not.
And what do you see in the job market out there now, Gary, as you're looking around?
Well, I see that if one is going to return, and I've you know, I'm in some negotiations now, I have to take a significant pay cut, which, you know, at this point, people are willing to do, and I'm certainly willing to do, to get back in the workforce, but not to return to the same level of wages I was at before, or standard of living. And I think that that has an effect on the economy as well.
Absolutely. And we'll pick it up. Thank you very much, Gary. We'll pick up the over 45 issue. Let's get a call as well from New York, Niagara Falls, New York. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I can remember when I was much younger being laid off after the Carter administration, when there was double-digit inflation and Volcker was the head of the Fed.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept interest rates very high, which we had a jobless recovery. And I can also remember Wall Street being just delighted that there was high unemployment because it meant that inflation wasn't coming back. And now that I'm, knock on wood, I have a job, I have to bail out Wall Street, and they're still, I think, delighted that some people don't have jobs.
Maybe you're the block against inflation. Without that job, we'll pick that up as well. Mark, thank you for your call. Bob Kuttner, what about first to our caller, Gary, and the over 45 Americans? You know, they can't wait for a whole new generation of industry maybe to be cultivated and discovered and come online 10 years from now. I mean, everybody needs a paycheck now, but they're in a particular tough spot here.
Well, that's one of the reasons I think why you need a really aggressive campaign of job creation. I also think that a lot of stimulus spending has a macroeconomic effect, meaning that the whole economy grows faster, and maybe some of these companies that have laid off workers will call back workers. But the problem of older workers typically being more expensive than younger workers, because they've had experience, they've been promoted, they have skills, and the caller's absolutely right, they are seen as the most expendable. This is a horrible source of pain and economic downdraft that's not counted in the statistics. Because if an over 45 person loses a job and somebody fresh out of school gets a job, the measured unemployment rate doesn't necessarily go up.
Mm-hmm.
But or if he takes a job at a lower salary or wage, he's hurting, and yet that doesn't show up in the official statistics.
And, Mark, what about our caller from New York in Niagara Falls? They're thinking about comebacks in earlier times. Do you see the comeback trail as similar this time? And what about the interests of, I don't know, Main Street and Wall Street, or, you know, ordinary workers in Wall Street? Are they aligned here? Are they on the same page or not?
Well, when you say Wall Street, when the caller was talking about Wall Street, it sounded like he was talking about investors
yes,
in stocks
so.
And
mm-hmm.
bonds. And in the early 80s, inflation was a key problem for stock and bond investors, and the goal was to get inflation down, and it was accomplished by running very high rates of unemployment. I don't think that's characteristic of today. Inflation is not an issue. It's outright deflation, falling prices, that's the concern. And I think investors, stock investors, would welcome stronger growth. I think that they would welcome job creation and lower unemployment, because that would ensure that the economy is going to move forward, and that means better corporate earnings, and that's better for stock prices. And I'm not sure bond investors at this point, you know, their interest rates are incredibly low. Deflation is the risk. So I don't – if we're talking about investors, I don't mm-hmm. think this is a similar situation as that of the early 1980s.
Bob Kuttner, you're going to be there in the White House at the Job Summit on Thursday. What are you going to be looking for to make your own kind of assessment of whether it's just jawboning, you know, political showmanship, or something real going on?
Well, I think it's both. I think he's buying time, the president. I think he is signaling concern, and he's also looking for ideas. It's not that they haven't been reaching out before. They don't need a high-profile event
mm-hmm.
to solicit ideas. So I really think the important question is what happens after the summit. What kind of legislation do they send up? What do they do with the more assertive legislation that the House is going to be promoting? What's the emphasis of the State of the Union, of the State of the Union address going to be? Is it going to be deficit reduction? Is it going to be deficit reduction in the future, but stimulus now? And the summit will be one input to that. But I think the backlash that you heard from the caller, that Wall Street is getting all the breaks and Main Street isn't, I think that's just politically lethal for the Obama administration if they don't get their arms around this.
Mark Zandi, we've just got half a minute here. You warn of a double dip, of falling back into recession if unemployment doesn't improve. What's your timetable, you know, roughly? Like, by when? Do we need to be where to avoid that?
Well, I think now. I think the summit should kick off a number of key policy proposals that starts getting more monies flowing into the economy by next spring and summer. If, in fact, we do a few of these things, I think we'll be okay in a much better shape a year from now.
Let's hope so. We'll be watching this week and in the weeks ahead. Grateful to each of you for being with us today. Mark Zandi at MoodysEconomy.com, chief economist there. It's always great to have you, Mark. Thank you very much for taking the time today.
Thanks, Tom.
And Robert Kuttner, co-founder, co-editor of the American Prospect. Bob, thanks very much for joining us.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.